This week, CDU leader Friedrich Merz insults both Chancellor Olaf Scholz and the plumbing community after the German government is roundly humiliated by the Constitutional Court. But what is it with Germany and its weird debt break fetish? Also, Amazon's subcontractor scam and what you can and can't say in a demo in Berlin. Sante!
In Berlin's heart, when news is unveiled, Meghan and Conrad with German tales. The German news, it's tough to bear, but with MegaCans, they're ready to head. Conrad, daily news at hand. Meghan feels to spare time to crack those cans. With each sip she takes, the Mega's her shield, but
everyone, it's finally time for a new episode of Megan's MegaCan. I'm Megan, I'm here with ex-Berliner Magazine and Conrad Werner. Hi Conrad.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. Happy Nikolaus.
Danke schön. Yes. Did Nikolaus bring you anything?
Not really, no, because I am an adult.
Yeah,
he
even
usually
some
favors
kids today.
I didn't find a tangerine in my sock.
Yeah, you're supposed to put your shoes out, aren't you?
Yeah, also I didn't put my shoes out, so how was he supposed to know?
Exactly. I've not even got an advent calendar. I've gone really low on the very low-key festive.
Yeah, I don't feel very festive yet.
I feel very... Working in a school is fun because it's just from November.
Okay.
Christmas jumpers and hats. It's great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you got into it. Are you baking already? You started baking?
My Christmas cakes are under my bed. I need to feed them tonight, actually, with brandy.
Right.
But I'm not bothering my arse with mince pies. I'm just going to Scotland at the weekend.
Okay.
To meet my niece. Actually, Nikolaus brought me a new niece.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think any of my family actually listened to this podcast, but I'm very excited. I kind of want to have it as a little time capsule of this was the day.
That's nice. Oh, congratulations.
Yes.
To your niece for
being born.
For arriving in this world.
It's exciting.
On this snowy day. Would you like to talk about German infrastructure?
Oh, God. Would you want a drink? It's not even a drink. We're going non-alc this time, but it's fake booze, so it'll feel like you are.
Yeah, I think it's good if we do, once in a while, we do a non-alcoholic one.
Yeah.
Just because, to prove that we can.
Exactly. And actually, the non-alcoholic G&T mega cans are really good.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm really cutting down on the drinking. I had to really rein myself in. Sometimes that happens. And you can get some really delicious non-alcoholic cocktails and stuff now. Really good.
So
this is Tanqueray alcohol-free with tonic.
Still in a tiny can, I see, but still.
It's fucking 250 mils. Like, I don't even have the energy in me to complain about this.
Okay. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Oh, lovely.
That is nice.
Yeah. See, we can still do this podcast without the support of the emotional crutch of alcohol.
Exactly. Exactly.
We can get through this.
We can. We're all in this together. What are we talking about first?
Well, the German government is in crisis.
Again? Jesus fucking Christ, what a shocker.
And as you noticed on your way here, the buses weren't running. And the trains are also not running, and it's snowing a lot. And at the same time, the government has just been told that its budget for this year and next year and the next year after will have to be all be redone. Christian Lindner and Robert Habeck have got to go into a room just before, and Olaf Scholz has told them, you've got to get a new budget together before Christmas, otherwise there's no presents.
Can I tell you what I understand about how this has happened?
Yes.
And then you can fill in the gaps.
Okay, I'll do my best.
So, from what I understand, the government had been factoring in a big kind of emergency fund. Was it like 60 million?
Billion.
Billion. Okay.
Over the 60. Next 60 billion over the next 3 years.
Okay. And that was basically released. Germany kind of undid the debt brake, which is like this really important thing that we've spoken about before, where Germany is not supposed to ever go in debt because Germany and financial security and la 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 la.
Yeah.
You can probably do it better, I think. But they did during the coronavirus because a state of emergency was declared. And so there was this surplus of this 60 billion.
Right.
And the coalition, did they sort of go, class, we can use that because corona crisis, also climate crisis. So we could use this money that we have to deal with that over the next few years and we can do all of this stuff. And then in classic fucking CDU fashion, they go, you think the climate is in crisis? Oh, well, let's just see. So they then go, as they are wont to do, they did it with the
other thing,
rent cap that they brought in Berlin. The CDU go off to the Constitutional Court, like the absolute fucking tattletales that they are. And they go, he has cheated on his homework. And everyone's like, fuck you. Yeah, he cheated on his homework, but this is a nightmare. And the teacher told us she was going to kill us all with floods if we didn't do the homework properly. So needs must.
Yeah.
It's not hurting anyone. It's just saving us all from drowning. And the CDU are like, meh. And the Constitutional Court have to look at it and go, blah, 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 within the letter of the law, blah, 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 blah. It's unconstitutional. So now they're like, fuck, there's a 60 billion hole in our
which plan. We're going to use for climate projects.
Right.
Yeah, that's basically it. We can just go now.
I would like to give a shout out to my friend Daniel, who sends me a press summary every day.
Yeah. Which is,
I read that and I come here and that's all I do, folks. That's all I do.
Yeah, that is pretty much exactly what happened.
Okay.
So now they have to come up with a new budget for this year, which means that they have to loosen the debt brake once again.
undo
the debt brake. And then they have to decide what they're going to do about the debt brake next year. Is essentially what is, and it's caused a lot of tension.
But what's the problem? It's just we're all in debt, surely, at various points. Yeah, and it's Germany. It's probably good for the money.
Debt is what makes the whole economy run. I mean, that's what capitalism is. It's just debt. It's just debt in the future that the banks lend each other money. Like, if you buy a house. And the bank lends you the money for a mortgage so you can buy a house. That money doesn't exist anywhere. They make that money so you can buy a house. They just make it up. They just make it up. And they say, here's 100 grand or whatever, and probably half a million or whatever.
If you think 100 grand is getting you anywhere in this city, you're laughing, mate.
Anyway, I shouldn't go into all that. But the point is...
So what's the problem? Germany loves capitalism.
So... Yeah, but what happened was in 2009, Angela Merkel and her then finance minister, who was an SPD man called Peer Steinbrück, came up said that we have to make people feel safe that the debt is not going to go out of control, which is what happened in 2008 and 2009. So we are going to impose a debt brake on the German state. So that the German state is only allowed to spend as much as it takes in. Now, there's a slight exception to this. For the debt brake is total for state governments, but for the federal government, the rule is they can take in something like 0.3. They can borrow 0.3 of the federal budget, something like that. 0.35. I'll look it up. Google it. You'll find out. Anyway, the point is that there's a slight exception, but it's very little. And Merkel and Steinbrück thought this was a really good idea, which is a bit odd at the time because it wasn't the state that caused the financial crisis. It was actually the banks for creating too much money and, you know, and not having any capital to back it up. I'm not an economist, but I believe that something like that happened.
Yeah.
So Merkel thought it was a good idea. Peer Steinbrück, who was seen as the kind of architect of the debt brake, even he now says maybe we shouldn't have made it a constitutional thing. Or maybe we, he said it's no longer Zeitgemäß, it's no longer fits with the time.
Yeah.
And it was only 14 years ago. So maybe.
So this is only, I didn't actually know that this has only existed since 2009. So in the wake of the sort of crash in 2008, I thought this was like a big constitutional German thing, like ages since forever.
It is a constitutional thing. They put it in the constitution. And at the time, they were able to put it into the constitution because they had a two-thirds majority in parliament, the two big parties, the SPD and the CDU. So, now, they don't. There's no such grand coalition, and we are stuck with this debt break. And yeah, so what is possibly interesting that now, just to get a little bit technical, what the Constitutional Court actually said...
Oh, this is about technical as I can get. I'm glad I'm not drinking. Come on. This 0% is going to sharpen me.
The Constitutional Court said that... Now, the exception is you're allowed to declare a state of emergency, like for the Ahrtal business, for when there's a natural disaster, a flood, you can borrow money. They said that's fine. For COVID, they're allowed to borrow money. They said that's fine. You know, you can declare a state of emergency and it's covered.
Fair enough. But
what the Constitutional Court said, it says you can't change the reason for your state of emergency after the fact. You can't say, we wanted the money for this emergency, COVID, but we didn't. But now we want it for another emergency, the climate crisis. He said that, which is that's what the Constitutional Court said. He said you have to come up with a new. You have to do the application again, basically.
Okay.
And you have to do it every year for every budget.
And who do they apply to then?
I think the Parliament. The Parliament votes on it.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
So that is what the letter of the law is. That's what Friedrich Merz, whose idea it was, the CDU, and that's what he said, you can't do that. And he was right. It turned out he was right. And he's like obviously smelling his own farts now from the...
Even more than he probably usually does.
For the rest of time, he's sitting in a room sniffing his farts going, I won. And yeah, so now... They have to come up with a new budget, and it's given Lindner a bit of a headache. And yeah, that's sort of, and it is a little bit weird because even right wing economists now think that the debt brake needs to be reformed, and it's become, and there were even like and you'll have noticed that the British press is having a field day with this. Well, the foreign press generally, but when they talk
they
about
love
Germany,
it when Germany, the trains are down, they're fucking delighted about that. They're like, oh, German efficiency.
I mean, but it's not just The Guardian, it's also The Telegraph and The Economist and the sort of conservative.
Interesting.
They all say, what the hell are you doing? Obviously, you need to borrow money. America has just announced that it's done this $700 billion. Dollar Inflation Reduction Act, where he's basically said, because, and yeah, and well, there's this, have you heard of the Schwäbische Hausfrau?
No.
It's
the Swabian
housewife.
Did we say Swabia?
Swabian, yeah. The
Swabian housewife.
Yeah. The Swabian housewife concept is that the Swabians are generally supposed to be very frugal. Careful with money.
Is this what we're basing our fucking economic policy on?
Merkel often brought up the Swabian
Merkel
housefrau.
Merkel can get in the bin. There, I said it. I'm sorry, Angie. I honestly have been listening to a podcast about really what her policies are, and I'm just like, you're fucking just a conservative right-wing nut job. Just packaged up in a more appealing, like it's not a Merz kind of character. She's an East German scientist. And I just, fuck off. There, I said it.
Yeah, so...
Sorry.
The Swabian Hausfrau is the woman who she's very frugal with money and she doesn't spend more than she takes in. And she doesn't exist, is the other thing. And also, it doesn't really work for countries anyway. It might work for your, like for a household, it might be a good idea. But for countries, it doesn't work because you can't, if you don't borrow money, to improve infrastructure, you won't take in any more money in the future. You're reducing your own income because a lot of income depends on infrastructure being available.
Yeah.
And the whole of the German economy that is based on this Schwarze Null is like a fetish under the finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, who was the CDU finance minister for a long time. He was really obsessed with his Schwarze Null, and he was really proud of it. And Christian Lindner, when he came in, it was the first thing he said when asked, as finance minister, I'm going to ensure the Schwarze Null, the black zero, will be maintained. It's a bit of a... It is odd that in the Germany does this. Other countries have noticed it and said, why are you doing this?
It is intensely odd, but yet to me at this stage not very surprising that you would take something that is really like appeals to the kind of balancing the books, the bureaucracy, the income outcome, all of that, and not getting into the tricky issues of whatever. But it also just seems like this is just constitutionalizing or putting into the constitution a constitutional justification for policies of austerity. Because, like you said, it's not actually dealing with the problem that caused the financial crisis, which was the regulation of the... What needed to happen was the regulation of the banking sector, but that didn't happen. Instead, they're going to be like, okay, well, we're going to clamp down on this. And we all know what's going to be cut. And that's what they're talking about now. We've had this, from what I understand, the reform of the benefits and those being raised. And they're like, oh, maybe it won't have to happen now. It'll have to wait. And everyone's fucking obsessing over this meaningless, bizarre, pointless, who's it benefiting?
Well, it just benefits the state, I guess. It doesn't really benefit.
Does it? Does it?
It just means that it's a political thing. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a political thing.
That's sort of what I mean.
It feels like if you feel like you're in good hands if the government isn't
exactly.
If it isn't spending so too much money.
But that looks really good on paper, doesn't it? And you can say, and you're like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, when you can imagine whenever Germany's doing better, other governments being like, oh, look at Germany. It balances its books and everything. But then you look a little bit closer and you go, well, is that sensible when the school systems are crumbling? And a lot of schools only have still have chalk. And... the PISA results came out yesterday, and Germany is another PISA shock. The first PISA shock was, I think, God, I want to say 2000 and something, where Germany did absolutely terribly.
What is the PISA thing? What is it?
So, sorry. PISA is the... Fuck. I should really know this.
It's like Ofsted for the whole of Europe, right?
Kind of, yeah.
It just tests the education systems of all the different... It kind of compares the education system.
Program for International Student Assessment. And it tests the skills and knowledge of 15-year-olds at random, like a random selection of 15-year-olds in, like... Whatever.
Oh, God.
I think I was looking at the list today. Like,
that's a lot of pressure for that 15-year-old.
83 countries. Yeah, God knows. And look, it is deeply problematic. It's flawed in lots of ways. Like, I just giving kids random assessments when they don't understand what they're for is pedagogically difficult. It's not really reflecting curriculum. I don't really know enough about it to be like... thing. And Germany had this really bad rating a decade ago. I think it was 2012.
And what's the ratings like?
So today's came out from last year's. So out of 80 something countries, they are 24.
Okay.
Which is for the richest country in Europe, one of the richest economies in the world.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's real fucking bad.
And it's like reading, writing.
It's reading, maths and natural sciences.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, so my point is this. Like, the education system is heading for a mad, like, it's already in crisis. And so does this then, like, what's the point of pointing to this Schwarze Null and going, look at that, when, like, Estonia is kicking your fucking ass in, like, these scores. And yes, they're problematic, but it does go to show that Germany, and they are important for international competition, the idea of German graduates being able to go out places. If you want to attract, we've talked about Germany really wanting to attract skilled workers. I'm looking at that. I'm like, why would I educate my children there? Jesus Christ. And they'd have to learn German. Yeah. Wow. And for what? To not do as well on the international university market. Yeah. Not that I think this is also a problematic way of looking at education that doesn't align with what I think it is. And I don't think that PISA is a good reflection of this, but I do think it shows the stagnation. There's been no improvement really or any meaningful addressing of these issues within the German education system.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, Schwarze Null. Geil.
Yeah, and well, and because, you know, this government was supposed to rejig the whole economy for renewable energy, which is going to cost a lot of money, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
but
anyway,
Friedrich Merz wants to smell his own farts. And look,
Friedrich Merz, do you want to know? Do you want to know? He'd made a speech in Parliament.
No. I'm not even drunk. Usually, I'd be drunk by now, and I'd be like, fine. All right, give it to me.
He called Olaf Scholz a plumber of power.
Okay, yep, fine.
He said that, and he said, this proves that you basically can't do it. Now, the thing is, what is a little bit interesting about all this is how are we going to get out of this impasse? Like, how are we going to, because obviously the government needs more money.
Yeah.
It needs to borrow more money. The CDU says we are because they have now discovered this one issue that they know that they can win on, they can score points on. They're never going to say we will reform. Yeah, we will allow you to reform. We will add our vote so you can have the 2/3 majority to reform the debt break. So now this is what the political pundits in Berlin are saying. These podcasts I listen to. Now, the only really real way out of this impasse is to have another grand coalition, have the CDU as part of the government again, because then they will have to deal with the issue, and then they will have to reform the debt brake. And you don't like this idea.
It's a really bad time to stop drinking, but it's fine.
So, because it's just a disaster. Because the other thing is that the CDU, they have this Friedrich Merz. He's really good at being an opposition politician.
Yeah.
But he's never been in government. He's never had a minister role.
He's a complete twat. And there's no possible way he can do this.
Yeah, and he can't really be a chancellor candidate in the way he does politics, because that's not how. And the CDU party know this. They're aware that they can't win an election. They don't think they can win an election with Friedrich Merz, because if he was the chancellor candidate, it helps the AfD, because they just think, well, we'll get him. And if they had new elections now, which like Markus Söder has called for example, that's what will happen. They won't benefit the CDU. It'll benefit the AfD if they have new elections now.
Mm.
Anyway. So it's a bit of a dead end. It's a bit of a cul-de-sac in politics. So now they've got to. So, but we got 2 more years to the next election. We'll see what happens.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, it's fucking dull. I mean, it's interesting and everything in this kind of like political way of like political machinations, but in terms of this is money that we needed for the climate.
What else has been happening? Are we? So I did a story about, we had Black Friday not too long ago.
We did.
Did
I buy anything on Black Friday? not from the A word. No.
Okay. So Yeah, Amazon. There's always strikes in Germany. Amazon is in a strange position in Germany because Germany is one of the few countries in Europe still has fairly strong trade unions.
Yes. And I will say, I've been doing a lot of Germany bashing of late.
Yeah.
Great workers' rights.
Yeah.
Like, real good.
But do you know what corporations like Amazon and do to get around this?
No. What do they do?
They use a lot of subcontractors.
God.
So which means that they and a lot when you order something from Amazon, it's very rare that an Amazon employee will come to your door. It usually will come from a small subcontractor, and according to the Peng Collective, which is an artist activist collective who do these sort of stunts and things like that, they set up a website for Amazon Leaks website, so you can as an Amazon employee you can report working conditions and everything like that. They say that they have this system where Amazon has in its contracts with its freight partners where it tells them that they can only run a maximum of 10 trucks, which deliberately keeps them they want them to be small, which will and basically put all the responsibility for the workers' rights onto the subcontractors.
Mm.
And the subcontractors then are incentivized to come up with tricks. And now this is, according to the trade union Verdi, this happens a lot. Like, for example, you get a kind of tracker, like an app on your phone, which you're supposed to, from Amazon, which you turn on when you start going. And the subcontractors sometimes will say, oh, you're not allowed to turn it on for the first hour of your work. Or you have to turn it, you have to turn it off at a certain time. It turns off automatically. And but you still have to go driving. Or they have like Amazon has this rule about there have to be two drivers driving. And sometimes they just say, well, we'll just have one driver and just don't tell anyone. So this is what Verdi alleges. This happens a lot. And they have like probably a lot of stories talking about it. I have talked to some subcontractor companies who say this is actually not quite true. They say that, you know, I talked to a subcontractor who works for various delivery services, including Hermes, you might know. What else is there?
DHL?
FedEx. DHL is a bit of a different case because it's the equivalent of the Royal Mail.
That's the German post, isn't it? So
DHL is like a huge company that has its own employees. It doesn't really subcontract that much, and they'll be
unionized to fuck.
They have more. They're more unionized at DHL.
Yeah. So it'd be Hermes,
FedEx,
both.
And he says this guy
FedEx
that I spoke
to. FedEx is a big. I've heard of FedEx from America.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, it is.
So even they're being subcontracted.
No, they use subcontractors too. But what he was saying, this guy, is that of all those companies, Amazon actually has the most compliance. That their contracts have higher rules. Like they set the rules for how much you have to pay your drivers, your lorry drivers, and he says that Amazon is the highest. Of the big companies, Hermes and FedEx. So he says that. So this guy was saying, there are certain things I would definitely criticize about Amazon, especially like the tax issue. But in my experience, they're actually the most, for want of a better word, ethical.
Yeah,
about
where's
treating...
the bar?
But
it's
also,
it's just wild. I was actually listening to a podcast talking about fast fashion, actually, not delivery, but same kind of idea that, like, as a consumer, there's just no possible way for you to make any real form of ethical decision about, like, if you buy something online or about, like, because the supply lines are now just so out of control.
Yeah.
And it's.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it depends what you buy and where it comes from, but it's really hard to.
But even
keep
then,
a track
like you can. So they were talking about clothes makers can track, you know, from the factories and everything. But where does the cotton come from then? It just becomes this. Yeah.
Well, Germany has brought in, as of this year, a supply chain law, which which forces, if a company is, if it, German companies have to, are responsible for their entire supply chain now.
Okay.
And that includes human rights. So that
surely that's just a thing. You have to be responsible for everything.
Yeah, but it didn't. No, it wasn't really a thing. I mean, you would just, if you're getting, say, palm oil from
selling me cotton like off the back of a lorry round by my house, and just like here, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna make these t-shirts, and then someone goes, whoa, this cotton came from the back of that lorry. I'm like,
ugh. Yeah. Well, now there's a law saying that, okay, for example, yeah, Haribo gummy bears, they use a lot of palm oil, and there's these
delicious palm oil,
delicious, lovely palm oil. Or there's this special wax. Actually, this was the story. There was a documentary about it. There's this wax that they put on the gummy bears to make them shiny, and that wax comes from a plant in Brazil, and that is the people who cut down the trees they have a really bad time, and now, since this law, Haribo is responsible for the conditions on that plantation for this because it's this.
Okay.
According to, and that is supposed to be a new thing, but
it's wild that that's not a thing.
It's obviously going to be quite hard for them to check and to police this law, I think, but the law does exist.
Okay.
Now. So, yeah, and that's partly the reason why they brought it in. And now there is a law being established to deal with this subcontractor issue, to crack down on it. Some people, including Verdi, want a total ban on subcontracting. Mm. So that you have to... But the subcontractors say, well, that won't solve the problem. That will just mean that everyone will have to work for Amazon, which is also... They will just make Amazon more powerful and make Amazon bigger. So,
yeah, but if I was a subcontractor, then I would say that. But they're also involved in exploiting people who are essentially working for Amazon anyway, but they're creaming off money in the middle as the middleman.
Yeah, like good
a,
point.
So, no, fuck off. So, what are the workers saying?
The workers say, well, the union say we should ban all subcontract and see how that goes.
Yeah. Because I can, like, it's very clear why they want to keep them small. Because then in Germany, you have the beautiful, beautiful enshrined thing of the Betriebsrat.
Yeah.
Which is your, like, little mini workers' union within any company over.
A works council, they call it. Yeah.
How many employees? I don't know, but, like, not that many.
Yeah. If your company is of a certain size, you have to have a works council.
Class. And they are real, they're great. They're always like, the colleagues are just like driving the boss insane. But you're like, yes. Please don't argue that for us.
There is the German government, the coalition government is looking into this, but I would be very surprised if they actually did ban subcontracts altogether, because the FDP is in the government and then they're more likely to protect Amazon's interests than the trade union's interests. But in a way,
it's wild. What they are arguing for is we want to be able to be exploitative.
Yeah.
Like, there's no...
And there are other issues with Amazon. What Amazon does, it kind of takes over the whole market. So retailers, like if you're a small business, you have to use Amazon now. And then you end up paying a lot of what you sell on Amazon to Amazon. And it's the same if you're a consumer. Like, everyone has an Amazon account now. And that's the first place everyone looks when they want to buy stuff. And it's, so there's this sort of issue with Amazon kind of sucks in all the consumer data. So they collect all the consumer data and they sell, and they use this marketplace issue where they can collect all the retailers, all the little small businesses. Mm. Now, Amazon's argument is we help small businesses, of course, but that's...
I mean,
also
the thing
debate.
Is with Amazon, they've built this. Apparently, whatever they've built is, like, fucking unbeatable. And to be honest, try using another website to order things. You're like, this is fucking shit. I'm absolutely not saying you should be using Amazon, and I really don't, but...
It's so easy, isn't it? It's just one click.
Yeah, I do think that subtracting thing where they're like, oh, but that's just going to mean Amazon has more of a monopoly. You're just exploiting Amazon's power to make your own buck. I don't buy that either. Like a pimp.
Mm.
No, thank you very much.
Anything else you want to discuss?
So one thing we discussed not being able to discuss.
Oh, yeah.
Is the fact, obviously, since our last recording, I think, there's another major war happening in the world, in the Middle East, and it's horrendously awful and sad. And I think it's the first sort of issue that we've both talked about being like, particularly because being in Germany and discussing this has a very specific context, which, to be honest, I wasn't fully aware of until this kind of all, you know, until the terrible, terrible attack on the 7th of October and all of the terrible, terrible aftermath. I wasn't quite aware. I don't know. Like, it's, I feel as a teacher, and obviously I'm not here in my teaching capacity, but it's public information on the internet. There is an official line that the German government are taking. And it's not something that I feel comfortable particularly discussing for once. And I think that is, I know I'm not alone in that. And obviously my voice is a lot less important than perhaps lots of other voices in Germany.
Well, yeah. So there was a big demonstration in Neukölln, near where we live, which was initially banned. So in Germany, you have a constitutional right to assembly, but you do have to register your demos.
Mm-hmm.
And the police can say, we think a crime might be committed at this demo, therefore you're not allowed to do it. So in this case, I guess the crime would have been hate speech or something. So they were speculating that there might be hate speech at this demo. So that's what they did. They did this in COVID times. They banned demos all the time.
Yeah.
So they had this demo. And of course, there was a lot of anger and an emotion on the street, and they did the demo anyway, and it kind of happened in the middle of rush hour traffic. Then it happened on Zonnenallee. People gathered, and I was on a bus going through it, which then the bus driver had to stop and said, "Everyone, get out because I can't go any further." Because there are hundreds of people on the street. A lot of them are already being arrested, and it is quite noticeable now when you go around Neukölln. There's quite a lot more police presence.
Yeah.
On the streets, and people are being preemptively arrested, it seems to me.
It's a very, very strange environment.
So, there's a lot going on. There have been like pro-Palestinian rallies and demos in Berlin since then. And that have had lives have gone ahead, but people have been arrested. Them people are now. I believe that you're not allowed to use the word genocide on a banner.
Nope.
And a lot of people, including Jewish people, have been arrested for having the word genocide on a banner. And I think if anyone should be allowed to use the word genocide in Germany, it should be Jewish people.
I'm feeling deeply uncomfortable talking about this, but also that we were allowed to ban the wearing of the, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but the kufia, the black and white scarf, which is worn not just in Palestine, it is kind of a symbol of that, but throughout the Middle East, because of the way that the schools are, for the most part, they're run by white middle-class people. You cannot wear a headscarf and be a teacher legally in this country. And so I understand that people don't really know how to deal with it, but a lot of stuff was happening, like a student and a teacher came to a physical altercation in a playground because he was waving up, had a Palestinian flag, whatever, which is not really appropriate within
the pupil did.
Within days of the fucking awful attack by Hamas. Like, I get that, but to me, that's not an issue that the government needs to intervene with. Like, that's a pedagogical thing. Anti-Semitism is awful, and there's absolutely no debate around whether that should be allowed. But a kid wearing a scarf... Oh, and a teacher lost their job in a big international school in Berlin.
All right.
For something that they posted about the conflict on their Instagram.
Have you got any festive tips?
Yay! Let's do Megan's festive tips. Okay, everybody. Regardless of whether you celebrate Christmas religiously or culturally or not at all, I think it's nice. It's one of the things that Germany does well, is kind of a festive vibe.
Hmm.
And this weekend, it is the most charming of all the Christmas markets, I think. It's the Rixdorf in Neukölln, the bohemian weird village that looks like a little village. You come off Karl-Marx-Straße, and it's just right there.
Mm.
And all the stands are independent. You can get the weirdest shit, and it's great. And it was almost not going to happen this year with the budget cuts by the CDU government when they came into Berlin. And then Neukölln, I think this is what happened. Neukölln released this thing to who don't have a CDU. Like, their Bezirk is, I feel SPD maybe.
I think so.
And they were like, this is a list of things that we're going to have to cut. Which was really important stuff like schools, da-da-da-da-da-da, whatever. And then it was like the Rixdorfer Christmas market. And everyone was like, the CDU have cancelled Christmas. And that was obviously a bad look. So I think maybe some extra money was...
Yeah.
It was really good.
Found some money to do the Rixdorfer Christmas market. Yeah. Isn't it just... Because it's only one weekend, unlike all the other Christmas markets, which are like 5 weeks.
Well, no, your speciality ones are going to be...
Okay.
Periodically for Christmas.
But isn't
for a weekend
it just
going to
be rammed now?
Oh, it's absolutely jammers. You cannot move. You can't move. You kind of shuffle around in a circle, doing a circle of the square like emperor penguins. It's great. But it's fun. There's... If you eat meat, the one of the Korean churches, I think, put on a thing where you go and eat all the pork. And they also do, if you don't eat meat, they do this battered vegetables in a pancake thing. Delicious.
Okay.
But mainly what you can do is at the north, maybe the southernly, I think it's, it's the southernly kind of corner of the Platz. Platz. There's a Späti, and they are always like top Späti. They're usually pumping the tunes and like, slinging Glühwein for really cheap prices. I don't know what inflation's going to do to it, but usually you can get 150 with a free pour shot of your rum or whatever in there.
So they're undercutting the Christmas market.
They are.
Ruthlessly.
Yeah, but they're great lads.
That's a good top tip.
Yeah.
Go to that Späti. Get your 150.
Yeah, but it's absolutely jammer. So you could just stand there and take in the ambiance because it is beautiful.
Because I've been to one Christmas market. I've been to the really bourgeois one on Bibelplatz, where you have to pay €2 to get in. Do you know that one? It's the Gendarmenmarkt.
Yeah, the Gendarmenmarkt.
One.
I love that one
too. But it's on Bibelplatz now because the Gendarmenmarkt is a building site, and it's €2 to get in. They have a stage where there's choirs and dancers and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's very much tourists and elderly German people.
Yeah.
And lots of crafts, lots of like expensive wooden toys.
Really expensive crafts. And it's always exactly the same stalls every year.
Yeah.
Without fail. And I don't know if they actually ever sell anything the rest of the time, if they really exist as a thing. It seems to me just something people do as a hobby. So it's quite good to go run on Friday night because usually the women running the stalls, they're all tan in the wines and the crack is 90.
Well, I went there and I had I went to the Austrian stall and I had a Kaiserschmarrn.
Mm.
Are you into the Kaiserschmarrn?
I don't think I've ever really had a Kaiserschmarrn.
Well, it's just a pancake basically, cut up fat pancake with Apfelmus and raisins and sugar and all that stuff.
I am all about the... savory snacks really at the Christmas market, I think.
Such as, what's your favourite savory snack?
So God, my mind has gone blank. There's a lot of hot cheese on potatoes. I do like just a bratwurst. That's always good. Those pancakes from the Christmas market or the Feuerbrot thing from the Korean place.
Käsespätzle.
Käsespätzle, obviously. Delicious. Very good. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God.
That was Megan's festive tips.
It was Megan's festive, slightly exhausted tips.
Okay.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks very much.
All right.
And have a good weekend. And we will be back before Christmas, hopefully.
Yes,
to do
we will
another
be.
One.
We
Maybe
will.
We'll have more festive tips then.
Yeah, let's just fucking fuck this news. Let's just do festive tips. That can okay. be political. I made it about politics. I talked about the budget.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
Yeah.
It was excellent, excellent podcasting.
Thanks, God. Take care of yourself, everybody. Wrap up warm.
Bye.
Bye.
The German news, it's quite a test. With Megan's Mega, you're feeling refreshed. Ooh. Megan's Mega Can. German news in English with a cocktail can. Deutsche Nachrichten's in Düster und schwer. Down the Mega.
Defy the fear.
Yeah.
It's actually a. Quite a positive message to give to people.
So.
I like to think that we have quite a positive impact on our listeners.
I hope so.
Because we try and get them to defy the fear of listening to the news all day.
I mean, it's better than reading a German newspaper, surely.
I would definitely recommend listening to our podcast more than reading any German newspaper.
German newspapers barely have pictures. So. Like, fucking, it's just a brick of text.
Oh, yes.
It's awful.
They seem to make a virtue of it. They think it's like so great to have no text.
Not like you Americans
no pictures,
with your fucking...
colour pictures.
decadent pictures in
I
your
know.
Newspapers.
Yeah,
what's that? A crossword puzzle? Oh! No
you
wonder
to,
you had Trump. Jesus Christ, everyone. Like, there's a middle ground.
You have to concentrate on the news. It's very important. Oh. That you have to, like, keep it there.
Have a mega.
Give us a picture every now and then.
Just a wee picture, maybe a, you know,
yeah,
a diagram.